Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Today we move into chapter 7 of the book of Ecclesiastes, which means that we have now completed the first half of the book, and we are moving into the second half. There are 12 chapters altogether. We have completed 6. We are starting into chapter 7. You recall that this book is about the investigation of the various elements of life by King Solomon to determine what yields the greatest earthly satisfaction. Is it human knowledge? Is it wealth? Is it sensual pleasure? Is it the satisfaction of hard, honest labor? And the conclusion is that it is none of these things apart from God, but all of these things, when they are subjugated to the will of God, and when God is given first place in our lives. Now today, as we come into chapter 7, we are going to have some general advice for making life more meaningful. And this really is a series of proverbs. We've seen other proverbs earlier throughout the book, scattered throughout the book. It's not all written in a proverbial style like the book of Proverbs is, though there are actually some elements in the book of Proverbs that are not quite, well, I won't get into all of that. But in Ecclesiastes, we find a lot of instruction that is not proverbial, but proverbs scattered throughout it all, because after all, it's written by Solomon, and he obviously thought in terms of proverbs and wrote a lot of proverbs, hundreds of them actually, and therefore we're not surprised to find them in this book. And the proverbs that we find in this chapter can be grouped into 4 categories. And it builds upon the question that is in the last verse of chapter 6. And in chapter 6, verse 12, we read, "For who knows what is good for man in life, all the days of his life, etc." But focusing in, honing in on that word good, what is good? What makes life good? And in chapter 7, we have a series of contrasts, things that are better than others that will help us understand what is good, the things that we need to cultivate in our life in order to make it meaningful. That's the whole purpose of the book. And so that's where we're going today. Thank you for joining me on this Friday, October 9. And many thanks for those whose financial gifts help us maintain this Bible teaching ministry on this station. All right, 4 things that are better. Number 1, sorrow is better than mirth. Now, all of these are memorable because of their unexpectedness. We wouldn't expect that, but that's what Solomon teaches us here. When it comes to quality of life, sorrow is a more important, a more significant, a more helpful element than mirth. How about that? Ecclesiastes 7:1. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. A very helpful section, and it deals with some things that are not very often considered by God's people for a couple of reasons. Number one, because we don't tend to study the book of Ecclesiastes much, and this is where this information is found more than any place else in Scripture. But number two, because we tend to believe the opposite of what Solomon is teaching us here. The culture in which we live says, don't worry, be happy. Do whatever you can to bring happiness, to bring mirth into your life. That's what you need. You need things to cheer you up and make you happy. You need things to drive away sorrow, sad thoughts, and mourning. And that will make your life better. It will make it more enjoyable. It will make it a better quality life. Solomon says, wrong. Sorrow is better than mirth. And here's how he puts it. And I'm going to give you three elements of these four verses, and then we'll go back and look at them more carefully. But number one, he tells us that death is better than birth. That's verse one. And number two, that funerals are better than parties. That's verses two through four. And number three, that tears are better than laughter. And what he's going to tell us, I'll give you the conclusion first, and then we'll go back and see how he arrives at it. But he's telling us that there's much more to be learned from adversity than from pleasure. You will learn important, significant, meaningful lessons about life, about God, about yourself, about others, about how to live a good life. You'll learn a whole lot more of that from adversity than you will from pleasure. A whole lot more of that from mourning than from mirth. I remember years ago reading a booklet, pamphlet, I think it was a booklet, written by a well-known Bible teacher in our country, and it was entitled, Don't Waste Your Cancer. Now, cancer is a very common disease, and so that book had wide circulation, and it appealed to a lot of people, and it particularly appealed to me because I have had cancer. And I already had learned, by the time I read that book, long before I read that book, that I learned some of the greatest lessons in life, and I made some of the greatest progress in sanctification in my life during the days when I was battling cancer. That helped me a great deal. Now, did I enjoy that battle? No. It was tough. It was difficult. It was sorrowful. There were times when I was so filled with despair that I either didn't think I was going to live or I frankly didn't know if I wanted to. That's the truth. I admit that now. This goes way, 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 way back. God gave me this experience pretty early in my life. I was an adult, I was married, but it goes way, 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 way back. I'd have to stop and figure out how long it's been now. Let me see if I can do that. It's been 36 years now since I had cancer. The first time, and I actually got another form, unrelated to the first one, a second time, which was not nearly as severe. And having been through the severe one, I found the second one to be really quite enjoyable almost because of the comparison. If that had been my first one or my only one, I don't know that I would have thought so. But compared to what I'd been through the first time, I found that second one to be a piece of cake. But again, it had some difficult elements to it, and I don't know if I'll want to take time to describe any of that or not. But the point being that there are some real important lessons to learn in times of difficulty and hardship and sorrow. That was the point of this book, Don't Waste Your Cancer. The man who wrote it had come down with cancer, and he had to battle cancer, and he learned these lessons during it, and he wrote this book to be helpful to others. Here's some things that you ought to learn from your cancer. Here's some areas where you ought to grow from your cancer. Don't waste your cancer. Don't let it just be a difficult experience without any gain, without any growth. without any learning, any advantages that come out of it. It is going to be a difficult experience, but it should, on balance, be more pluses than minuses, but you're going to have to keep some certain things in mind if that's true. Now, don't waste your cancer. Don't waste it. Don't let it just be an experience that you go through, and when you come out on the other side, you haven't grown at all in grace and knowledge and in your sanctification. Don't waste your cancer. Well, that's what Solomon, in essence, is saying here. And so he says, first of all, that death is better than birth. Now, that's a bit puzzling. Verse 1 actually has two statements in it. The first one's very clear, but the second one is puzzling. The first one is, a good name is better than precious ointment. He doesn't elaborate on that, but he does tell us that it's important to have a good name, that is, a good reputation, and we are largely responsible for our reputation. I have learned along the way that sometimes, because of slander and things that people will say that are untrue, that some people will believe, and you don't have an opportunity to correct. There are times when you really can't control what other people think of you. You can't really control your reputation in every case to every person. Ultimately, you have to yield that to the Lord. Lord, not only is my life in your hands, my reputation is in your hands. What other people think of me is in your hands, ultimately. But that doesn't mean that we don't do things to improve or to damage our reputation, and we do, and we know that. We know that we have done both, probably, at various times in our lives. And so the first statement is simply, a good name is better than precious ointment. And precious ointment, it could be very, very, very costly, very valuable. Think about that box of ointment that was broken, that alabaster box that was broken, and the ointment poured out upon Jesus by Mary. And we're told that it was worth about a year's salary. I can't imagine that. Can you imagine taking, in the first place, can you imagine owning ointment that would cost a year's salary, at least for a laboring person, 300 denarii or so, would be, I don't know what that would be in today's wages, but let's say $30,000, $40,000 in American economy today, and possibly more, but we'll stick on that for a round figure to think about. Can you imagine owning a box of ointment, a container of ointment that costs that much? You'd have to be pretty wealthy to do it, and Mary obviously was. And that's another story for another day. I did read somewhere that in that day, sometimes people bought this as a hedge against inflation or as a form of savings. So that puts it in a little bit different light. But what it does tell us is that ointment could be very costly in Bible days. We don't think of it in those terms, but we need to think of it in those terms so we understand what Solomon is saying here. A good name is better than precious ointment, costly ointment, the kind of ointment that Mary poured out upon Jesus' feet. That's the kind of ointment that is very costly, very valuable, but a good name, a good reputation, a reputation for honesty, a reputation for integrity, a reputation for kindness, a reputation for godliness, is better than that. That's the first part of verse 1, and the part that's easy to understand. And the second half we'll have to take up, Lord willing, next week. Join me then. Until then, good day. May God give you His eternal peace.